in your information sheets, you have a lot of keywords that I sometime in January, now it's late May, in January, I wrote down these words and these thoughts. And I will, of course, stick to them. At the same time, it could attempt to make a speech less lively, less personal, because this is what is written, and what is written you should stick to, because this is sometime in January prepared, and then you should be faithful to that. So I will stick to it, and if it's too stiff and I sometimes run away, please pardon me, please understand me, because I have given you this type of background. Once again, my name is Lennart Sakelius. I was a member of the European Parliament between 1999 and 2004, and at that time meeting you, Charlie, even younger than you are now. It was lovely to meet all these people from all around Europe. I represented the Swedish Christian Democratic Party on the European level, European People's Party, within parentheses, Christian Democrats, end parentheses. And at that time, the British Conservative Party was also part of this largest European Parliament group. So it was called European People's Party, Christian Democrats, European Democrats, ED, EPP-ED. In 2006, the Christian Democrats, I represent all of Sweden, we lost one seat, went down from 2 to 1, and then I returned back as a high school teacher. And that's what I am now, half-time. I'm also half-time a journalist. I also have some tasks and responsibilities within Church of Sweden. And that's the topic, if you'd like to ask things about politics and Church of Sweden, we could raise that maybe more afterwards. I was elected to the Swedish National Parliament in 2006, so that for 4 years I have been in a situation where the Christian Democrats in Sweden has slightly lost electoral support, so we lost a number of seats, including mine. Has made me probably a more happy man, a more relaxed person, a person that has a little more space in life, maybe not now in May when you have to do the grades for your high school students back home. I'm a teaching religion, which is the most important of all classes. So I do have some tests with me here, sadly to say, all the way to Poland to correct in order to put the final grades. But I served in the Swedish Parliament in 2010, and then I went back to journalism, and especially to high school teaching. I would like to be personal, and now this is the first speech. This is the first time I ever attend European Leadership Forum. So I might not be that relaxed in the beginning as I will hopefully be at the end when I'm too close, and maybe I'm relaxed. But let me say as follows. I have one political secretary, Mr. Jakob Rudolfsson, that asked me in the Swedish Parliament, could I get a week off? Because I would like to go to Hungary, a town called Eger, and there is something called European Leadership Forum, and I have been there before, and it is just lovely, and I would like to take a week off. And the way you presented, I said, you have to take a week off. And he went there a number of times. I don't know if he's here, because there are so many people. He's actually working with Mr. Stefan Gustafsson, who gave the morning introduction and theological presentation this morning. So through my political secretary, I heard about you and this forum a number of years ago, but this is the first time I have the opportunity and the great privilege to attend. I should be personal. And the first question that I put when asked to speak about how is it to be an elected representative is the calling, the question of vocation. Is it me? Is it me, Lord? Because we speak in a Christian context and we are people of faith, not making us better people, but not making us worse people than other citizens in our communities. The question of vocation and calling is crucial and important, I think, for all of us, not just when it comes to politics, but when it comes to our profession, our studies, our lives, but also with whom to share life with. And life is also fine without having a family. I have a family, I have a wife, 3 children, but life is not defined by profession, by family, by politics, but it could be a part of your life. So therefore, I think that the calling in praying and listening to your heart is important. Where do I find my home? I grew up in a clergyman's home back in Sweden where we didn't speak too much at breakfast. Maybe you would say that's Swedish. Swedish people, they don't speak, they eat and let the mouth make you silent, was a harsh telling to the children in the old days. Not in my family, but I believe pre-World War II. Let the food keep your mouth shut, was the very gentle way of telling the students or the children. But we listened to the morning news. So I grew up with the morning news in the early 1960s, being born 1957. The assassination of President Kennedy, the Vietnam War, the uprising and the student revolt in Paris, 1968. I was a small child, a small boy, but still it was part of my life from the very beginning. Maybe my vocation, my calling, I hope I have one in this area, started up already then. But I think that you should listen to your heart. When you enter politics and political thinking and you have an interest in society, you should of course both have an idealistic point of view. I think that's a part of the faith, but I think you're also part of the faith is that you have some sort of realism to it. A lot of times being self-critical to myself and to Christians many a times. Christian people tend to be highly motivated for something that they find enormously important and charming for the moment, at least for a while. But politics, serving society in this sense, this is not the only way serving society is long term. And I would say it's even more than long term. It doesn't count, it doesn't end with you, as important each individual of us is. It doesn't end with yourself. Is politics serving society in this way as an elected representative? Is that your choice? Is that where you should be? Then you always tend to think the question, will I be elected? Will I be victorious? Will I reach success? And that's very human, and that's very political, and that's very much a comment that will be entrusted upon you or that will be put towards you. But is that the key question? Is the key question, if you are elected, if you get an office, if you are successful, if you win, or is it like Pierre de Coubertin, who started the Olympic Games, or should I say restarted the Olympic Games, because the Greek people had it a long time ago, he said the most important thing is to participate. And I think that should be the Christian attitude towards politics. If you have a vocation, if you have a calling, if you have a motivation, if you have the idealism, and I ask you to keep that idealism, I hope I have preserved some of it. Would be lovely if I served saved a lot of it, but not all of it, to be frank, because life is hard also. But you save a lot of that idealism, but also combining that with knowledge, realism, how life and the world of politics is. I think then you have a starting point. Because when it comes to democracy and Christianity, now I see that I don't follow these words here completely, but forgive me for that. When it comes to Christianity and democracy, we take it today more or less as self-evident. We can go back to a number of countries where we could see that the Christian churches and the Christian teaching has played an immense role when it comes to bring democracy about, not at least in this country, not at least in this part of this country. We are in Poland. We are on the southern part of Poland. And I thought that we would yesterday go through the town of Wadowice. We went through the town of Auschwitz instead. And you know what that all stands for, with the Holocaust and the total negligence. Neglectance of the human dignity and the dignity of the human life. But in Wadowice, Karol Wojtyla, who became John Paul II, the so-called Polish Pope, was born. And you know the meaning of the Christian message when it comes to democracy, freedom, dignity in this country, and especially here around Kraków and the southern part of Poland. It's hard for us to understand the full meaning of it. But some of you, I believe and trust, come from what was used to be called Eastern Europe. Should be more called Central Europe or Central Eastern Europe. Having lived under communism and one-party rule, lack of judicial system that was fair and just and reliable. And you know that Christianity and the Christian gospel was a threat in itself towards communistic atheism, one-party rule, and dictatorship. It's an enormously strong message when it comes to the gospel and society and the dignity of man relating to democracy. I could also say that in my neighbor country, being a Swede, in Norway, the Lutheran bishops during World War II gave immense moral and spiritual support for the Norwegian people against the Nazi German occupation. And also the Kai Munk preaching in Denmark, assassinated like Friedrich Bonhoeffer just at the very end of World War II. By the Nazis, giving spiritual support to the Danish living in the same situation during World War II. But going further back, and not at least in the Catholic-dominated countries in Europe, it was not self-evident that democracy and Christianity was a good thing. And therefore, when many nation states were established in the mid and second part of the 1800s, for example, Italy, there was a clash between the Christian teaching and the Christian church position and the building of national democracy. And Christian people abdicated in many countries, and we could go through one each of them, and you could tell your story about your country, but there has also been a Christian tradition of abdicating from legislative and political work and entering democratic elections due to the fact, and you have to be open and honest here, that you could get dirty in politics, because politics and being an elected representative can never be please everyone. Can never be that you would just be applauded. It can never be that you always are welcomed and are cheered at. It could also mean, and it will mean eventually, sometime, somewhere, that you will meet the other experience. And for some Christian people, and we like to be Christian people in the sense that we are good people, and we like to be kind to people, and we like to be nice to people. And it's easier to say, it's more joyous to say yes. I like to say yes. But what I teach my high school students back home in my small town in central Sweden, and not at least the girls, is that maybe the most important words, at least a lot of times in today's society, is a word that has a special power in the Russian language, where it has an extra letter compared to in Swedish. It's njet. To be able to say no. This is wrong. I cannot support this. I cannot go for it. And you are not a bad person. Also saying, you don't have to speak Russian, of course. To say no, Swedish is nej, which is three letters. English is two. And Russian, they have four letters. Njet. So we Christian people, we tend to say that I like to be kind, I like to be helpful, I have to be show empathy, I have to show a concern, what is your point? I have to be a person of goodwill. But that does not mean that I accept everything, that I run the agenda of today's media, of today's common pattern, or what is mainstream. Good, if it's sound, yes, but it doesn't. in all cases. And you should also, without speaking Russian all the time, be able to say no, and then thereby meaning that people will be upset. Well, I thought you were a good person. I thought, well, you're a Christian, and you say no to a thing like that. So what I say here, and I'm not a psychologist, but I try to say this also from the depth of my soul, politics also is rough and tough, but you have to face it, because I don't think that in the long run that you would be respected, and at least, which is not, I think, in the Christian point of view, because the law tells us, love your neighbor as you love yourself. If you don't respect yourself, if you feel that you cannot stand looking people in their eyes and being honest, not just to them, but also to yourself, then I think you will be lost in political life. So be careful, not just with your electorate, but maybe even more with yourself. And with yourself, thereby also with the relationship you have to God. I have written a question. Whom should I serve? There are a lot of good reasons why to enter politics. People have entered politics using a language of class struggle. That does not mean that it's wrong to work. It is good, actually, to work for these people that are close to you, that have a situation that is maybe based upon economical and social injustice, or if not injustice, a situation that is hard. And you feel that I come from this social group and I like to work for them. It's fine. But if it's a fist like this, and you like to do it in the name of the fist, in the name of fight, and I would also use the word class struggle, you don't have the love and the concern for society as a whole as your starting point. You work for a just cause, but you say no to look for the society as a whole, and you have to care for also those that don't vote for you. So therefore, you fall down in a ditch, although you have a motivation that is sound, but you have to be balanced. It's not wrong to work for your nation, for your country, for your town, for your region. It could mean that you work for the independence of your country or region. I'm not getting into the Scottish question right now, or the Basque question, or whatever. I mean, there are elements in Europe that are very sensitive. We used to all watch a map, Yugoslavia, South Slavic Republic, used to be a kingdom, now it's seven nations. You could work for your people, for your cultural rights, for your right to express yourself in that language that you love. I don't mind speaking English, but I think I have a message to tell our lovely children and some students back home in Sweden that there are Swedish words when you use an English word, and you don't have to use an English word to make it more look and sound more updated and more lovely and more attractive. We have sound Swedish words for it. Use it. But use English words when you speak to people in English. But nationalism could, of course, mean that we are the center of the world and we have an agenda that is actually to make it worse for our neighbors, or don't care so much about our neighbors. So nationalism has the potential, and we can see it in today's Europe, and we have seen that for a good time through the centuries, with a number of wars in Europe, where we have to understand that nationalism is a very, very dangerous power. That does not mean say goodbye to loving your country and caring for your country, its culture and its people, whether it's a diverse country or it's ethnically still fairly homogeneous. Still, you have a right to work for it, but you have to work for it in a balanced way. A lot of people enter politics due to economical interests. it's nothing wrong to be Christian and care for economy. I think I have later on in the speech, but let me say it once again, and I'm bringing that up at the end of the school year, that there are three, or maybe we should say four, I think we could call it in English, pit holes. Pit hole, isn't that a hole in a road? With potholes, thank you. Potholes, thank you. Potholes, it's a hole in a road that shouldn't be there. And these classical potholes that we as Christians also have to face and encounter is power, money, sexuality, and drugs. But drugs is also related to spirits and spirituality. Because a lot of people, when people go for drugs, they are searching for their inner soul. And the Swedish word for hard liquor, sprit, you add one single letter to sprit and you have the English word spirit. And I tell my students that there are some people, I'm myself a man of temperance, but there are some people that they are so lovely when they get just a little alcohol, and they are more open than the shy Swedish person that they are normally, and they don't dare to say anything. But when they get a little alcohol, it seems to be good spirit. And then there are those that get so aggressive, so violent, so awful. And of course, the third group is the people who fall asleep, but maybe after a while. But anyhow, it shows the spirit of your soul, and people going into drugs, misuse of alcohol, not speaking about narcotics and so on, that's misuse from the very start. They are searching for spirituality for their souls because they need that, as everyone does. But they, of course, go in a wrong direction, in a wrong way, and that they will not be fed spiritually in that way. You could work, and you should work, for economic interest and for people having jobs and a sound economy in the nation state, in the region, or in the municipality. But if politics is all and only about, just only about economy, it's not a full perspective of society, of man, and it's not a Christian perspective staying solely at the economical aspect of politics. That will make you one-sided and very materialistic. But no one should tell a Christian that he or she is a bad person caring for his or her economy, or for the economy of all of us. Because when it's not cared for, and we don't have to mention a number of countries in Europe and outside of Europe, because there are people from the United States here as well, you know what a situation a country could be put in if you don't take care of the economical side. And we also have many biblical passages about that, not at least from the Old Testament. As a Christian, you should work for the common good. You should work for ideals. You should work for solidarity, meaning not just solidarity with my people, my class, my faith, or my ethnic group, but for all people. But without saying that those values and that faith that I have as a base for my values has to be loosened up, I use the term now in a negative sense, liberalized and loosened up. You can be firm, and I think that the problem is not whether you're firm or not. I think it's your style, it's your attitude, and the way that you present. Now, a self-righteous man speaks, and I shouldn't be, but it sounds self-righteous. But still, let me say it, because I think I puzzled a lot of people. On April 1st, and you know what April 1st is in England, All Fools' Day. And I think, what was his name, who burned down the parliament? Alan Dukes? Fawkes, yeah, Guy Fawkes. He burned down the parliament, yes. In Sweden, we don't know so much about the British parliament being burned down on April 1st in the 1600s, maybe, something like that, yeah. Anyhow, but it's All Fools' Day in Sweden. So to fool one another. On that day, 2009, the Swedish parliament debated for hours whether or not to change the basic concept of marriage. You know about what goes on in England. You know what has just happened in France. In 2009, we were not first in the world, and not first of the Nordic countries. Norway and Denmark were before us. And Finland is, my understanding, is underway. We were debating the legislation on the marriage. And I started my speech at the end of this long debate saying that I can see a number of people that have been working hard for this cause. I mentioned them by name. They were sitting there and there and there. And I said, it's time for you to rejoice. You have worked hard. You have worked long. You will today, because the vote was not close, win Sweden. It was not a close vote, sadly. I think it would have been much closer if a referendum, but there never was. We worked for a referendum, but there never was. And I said, you work for this. You will be victorious. Rejoice. And you will have a good, if I use the word party, I don't know, but you will have a good celebration tonight. But at the same time, try to remember, at least slightly, that the same joy as you have, there is a lot of people, including myself and a number of MPs here in the Swedish Parliament, that feel sadness about this course. Not because we against you, not because we don't love you, but we have other values. And we have another view of what marriage is. We will not take away your joy, but please remember us as well. Of course, it's a day of sadness for us. Elizabeth II spoke, the British Queen, spoke about annus horribilis the year, I think, in the 90s, when things happened in the royal family with divorces and Windsor Castle burned. That year in October, in the Church of Sweden National Synod, I was once again in the debate, seeing my own Lutheran church, used to be an established church, still with almost 70% of the Swedish population being members, would not be right to say adherents, but still members. The same church taking this church taking the same decision on a so-called theological basis when it comes to marriage, as the Parliament had done half a year before. I was in both debates and I lost. Should I then give in? Should you give in? Losing? You shouldn't. I see that time is running, so I will almost come to a conclusion here. Because I think that what you are working for and what I am working for is what I have written here in the paper. Maybe, and not putting ourselves as high up that, as that person, but I think we can see him as a role model. You know, when being brought up to Mount Nebo, Moses was told by the Lord that this is the land of milk and honey, and you can see into it, but you will never enter it. The people will, and there will be leaders after you, and they will enter that country. And you have seen it, but you will never enter it personally. I'm not saying that you and I myself can see the land of milk and honey. To be honest, I don't see that in my forecast. I'm not speaking about the weather. I'm speaking about another forecast. I cannot see that we're entering a situation where the harvest is ripe for Christian values. And when we are on our way back, pro-life, pro-family, pro-freedom, we could add much more things. But if we work for life, for family, and freedom, including the religious freedom, it's good enough, and we should be able to join around a rally around these 3 points. I cannot see that it's a downhill slope. I love cross-country skiing. I live in town, 90 kilometers long, 90 in a town where we have the world longest cross-country ski race. It's 90 kilometers, and if you're an American, it's 56 miles. It's a long way by car. It's a long way, even longer, on cross-country skiing. There are some downhill slopes, but there are a lot of uphills. You have to climb up these hills, and we have to do that. as Christians, if we find the calling to enter politics and being elected representatives. But we should not give in, because like Moses, looking into the promised land, he took his responsibility when it was his time on this earth. And we should pass on the torch to coming generations, whether we are young people, middle-aged, or older people, because there will be people after us that we might have met, that we will never meet. But they will come, and they will come after us. And endurance, I think, is one very much underestimated Christian strength. And it's time for endurance. And it's time for endurance when it comes to political and societal life. Let me end before giving you time to ask. When I have entered politics, I've been thinking a lot about my parents. Not specifically about my dad listening to the morning news, but I've been thinking about how lovely it was to have parents, but how lovely it is, and caring parents, loving parents, but how lovely it is also to feel that my time has come to move, in my case, to the military, and then to the university studies, and then marriage, children, to be my own, if not master, but be my own, in a sense. Entering politics could mean that you get parents, sadly to say, in the bad sense back. You could almost feel that your party leader or that political secretary general in the party, who is the headmaster of the party, telling that you did wrong, why did you say like that, why did you go to that conference, why did you do like that, that someone is looking for you, if not a CIA or KGB, it's not like that, but they're looking for you, they're controlling you, they're telling you all the time. And as sometimes people say in Sweden, if things are fine, we don't say anything. If things are bad, we tell you. You need encouragement. And in politics, too little of encouragement. And too much telling, wrong, wrong, wrong. We need the Ten Commandments. Thou shall not. But we could also present it that thou shall. And we could encourage one another. We should, of course, tell that we have to correct one another when we do things wrong. But at the same time, entering a political party, giving less space for your integrity, for your conscience, and for your will to change that political party, because there should be also internal party politics, party democracy. They are called democratic parties. That could also be an obstacle. Maybe now you've heard a former MEP and a former MP and said that after this, I will never enter politics. That will not be my vocation. It sounded so negative, it sounded so hard. But at the same time, I hope that you feel that I'm not a broken man, that I still have some spirit left, and that I still is a member and an engaged member in the Christian Democratic Party in my home country of Sweden, that I still write a number of articles in politics, national, domestic politics, and international politics. And I still find that it's a part of my vocation. Maybe not the part of life that is the most happy part, because it could be also a part that you feel a vocation to based upon your sense of duty. That it's my turn. It's the turn of our generation to serve. We had a king who died at age 91 in 1992, the grandfather of the present Swedish king, he said, the duty above all. It didn't sound maybe all that wonderful that you should be a man based upon and a woman based upon your duties. But don't forget duties. And it could be a duty to serve. And remember that it's not all the time another generation. It's not all the time other people. If you don't serve yourself, encourage. Encourage other people. If you think that they go wrong, if you have encouraged, it's easier to tell them. If you use the term correct. You've done so many good things. I love your work. I've been supporting you. But in this question, have you been thinking about this and this? That would lead in my eyes to another standpoint, to another vote. Because you don't have to enter yourself. You can also support. And I think we will speak about that, Charlie, later on. Your relationship as an individual Christian, as a congregation, but maybe also as a denomination or as a church, being more on a national or at least a regional level, not just a local parish. How you handle the relationship with the elected representatives. To conclude, if you do not enter political life, and a political party, you are not a worse citizen at all. You're not a worse Christian. You're as good as that one who does enter. But someone has to do this work that could make you get things on your hands that make you dirty. Not just, I'm not speaking about that you should enter dirty politics in the sense with money, and fraud and things like that. I'm not speaking about that, but dirty in the sense that not everyone will love you, and that you cannot be a person that pleases everyone at the same time. In that sense, you could be put into a corner, and you would feel, who loves me, but I have to care for all of my constituency, for all of my country, or for all of Europe, although those ahead of me are not thinking of the whole picture. It could be a cross, but the cross has a double meaning, where it has more meanings than two. Let me conclude. In Sweden, the Friday in Easter week is called the Long Friday. And I tell my students, it's a long Friday. Christ died on the cross that day. When things are sad, when things are boring, maybe they have been here, boring. Times go slowly. We Swedes speak about the Long Friday. And in the old days, you could not do anything that could be of fun or laughter that day, including playing soccer. You didn't do that on Fridays. That was removed in the 70s. Now it's a dancing day, soccer day, whatever, the malls are open and so on. Yeah, you know, modern society, at least in Scandinavia and Sweden. But in England and in the US, it's not a long Friday, it's a good Friday. Because the cross meant that he took our sins, what we have done wrong to human fellows and to Christ and God himself. He took that away and it broke the death. He gave us life eternal and that promise. And it's a sign of victorious, or victory. It's not a long Friday. It's a good Friday. Politics could be both a long Friday. But it could definitely be, if not in your generation, but bringing the torch to people to come, to keep these values that are eternal and that will stay and that in the long run will be victorious. Not just in legislation, but in the minds and hearts of people. Because a legislation cannot stay if it's based upon hearts and minds of people.